Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Research Miniseries. Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Research Miniseries. Today is episode number 4. Last episode we looked at how to get started with a research question and the process that involves with Dr. Sandy McQuarrie. And today we are going to be going one step further and taking that research question and actually designing a research study. So let's get straight into it. So Sandy, we've figured out how to get started. We've gotten our question. What next? What kind of methodologies exist? And if, say, for example, the one that comes from the top of my mind is a randomized control trial, you hear about that a lot in research. So what is that? What does it look like? And how do you get started?
Yeah, so that's used an awful lot in clinical experiments where they're comparing a drug with something else, perhaps a placebo or another drug or another intervention or just a control, nothing at all. It's very prevalent, and it's caused best practice to evolve quickly based on evidence. And as I said in an earlier podcast, like a lot of the things that we did in the early 90s were not based on randomized control trials. They weren't based on best evidence. They were based on things that have been used in the war. Military anti-shock trousers are an example where, in terms of the trauma patient, they probably didn't help the trauma patient. Certain instances of using crystalloid fluids to the point where you put a lot of fluid into a patient, again, found not to be in the best interest of the patient. But we're going to talk about a lot of terms, but again, you find them in that book, and I think you're going to have a chat about the book and where to find it. It's called Introducing, Designing, and Conducting Research for Paramedics. And it is so digestible. It's so good. You've decided in our last episode, we were talking about, you know, looking at an educational intervention. But let's look at we had an honor student by the name of Joel Marriott, lovely person. He's now a paramedic in New South Wales. He wanted to understand if he could mitigate stress in young paramedic students before they delivered a critical skill. So that became his question. And he would have hypotheses based around that. So this is very much a quantitative research study. And it took the form of a randomized controlled trial where you have a pool of participants, and half the pool will have what's called the intervention, remember the PICO, and the other half will receive, in this case, nothing. The intervention was a mindfulness course that involved learning how to do box breathing. So he went to the literature first. We talked about that before. We found that it really wasn't being done before. The issue, of course, is students and stress. And he thought he could contribute new knowledge. So he formulated his PICO question. He did his literature search and review. He did his systematic literature review. He turned on his Google Scholar alerts. He then assembled a research team to supervise him, which I was part of. And he started to formulate what is called the methodology. The methodology is crucial to a good quantitative study, especially in that if you describe your methodology correctly and it's sound methodology, any researcher anywhere in the world should be able to use the same methodology, and everything else being equal, should get similar results. So he had a question. He had the ability. He had a group of second year paramedicine students at our university. He had the access to an intervention, and he was a mindfulness trainer by the name of Dave Wood, and who was going to do the training for the randomized cohort. And he had a simulation area where he could set up critical skills and be able to measure variables. Now, variables are things that we measure to see if there's any difference in them between the students, between the intervention and not, and before and after or during. He was interested in physiologic variables mostly, and they are heart rate and respiratory rate, heart rate variability, things like that. We use the biometric shirts, the HexoSkins. So he created a methodology, and this would have taken kind of all up. He was in a one-year honors program, probably took him about 3 months. And he developed the methodology by seeing what others had done similarly, but not the exact same question. He found pediatric intensivists in Delaware who did something very similar, but they weren't paramedicine students, and how they created their research questions, their hypotheses, and their methodology, adapted a lot of it. He applied for and obtained institutional ethics with Griffith so that everything is done according to national and international guidelines. He created all the ancillary things that go with it, all his data measurement tools, his spreadsheets, participant information and consent forms, publication forms, publicity forms, and things like that, with our scientific officer to create a series of very high stress critical skills. And we think about resuscitating a newborn or doing CPR on someone who's in sudden cardiac arrest, starting an IV on a patient in low light. And he had mapped it out in terms of his methodology. He would obtain a baseline resting set of physiologic variables, like at rest, potentially not stressed, and he would measure them again just before they went in and during and just after their intervention, just after their skill delivery, and he would compare them between the two groups. So mindfulness and breathing, nothing at all. Mindfulness, breathing, nothing at all. So to recap, he did a PICO, he went to the literature, did a systematic review, he found other methodologies that were helpful and adapted them to his own. He obtained institutional ethics. He got all the necessary equipment. He had a small budget, and he was ready to do testing. So he had delivered the intervention. So half the group got this wonderful session with Dave Wood, and the other half didn't. And they all showed up. We did a kind of a baseline where no one had the intervention, 1 day worth of testing. Half the group went for intervention, and then all the groups came back on the second day and did more critical skills. And then we were looking to see if there was differences in those physiologic variables. I'll pause. What questions do you have for me?
Yeah, that's really fascinating. It's a good way of seeing how an RCT can actually be used in practice, and it gives good context to choosing that particular type of study. I guess my next question would be, what happens if your study doesn't fit the sort of classical RCT? What next? Which one do you choose? What's out there?
Oh, very much so. So you can do descriptive profiles. So you can understand and measure and compare the characteristics of people who did your podcast, for instance. And that was the last example we used. Are we finding that it is the 19 to 23 year old and it's in these countries, or is it, you know, 40 to 43 year old in Indonesia? Things like that. So those are ways of uncovering in terms of from a demographic and a frequency point of view, people who are doing something that you want to study. We can do cross-sectional. So we measure attitudes where you might want to understand, in that case, this learner, what motivates them to listen to this podcast. What doesn't motivate them to listen to this podcast? What makes it hard for them? What changed in, if anything, in their skills, knowledge, or attributes, of which you have to be careful what you chose to, how you measure them. And, you know, how would you, and finally, how do you want to present those findings so that they're both findable and reproducible? So, yeah, so we, most paramedic students hear about the RCTs and are understanding that it's an intervention and half the group gets something, the other half doesn't. They're not easy to do, but they drive best practice, has to drive best practice. In the qualitative side, we explore kind of the face of our professional identity as paramedics, you know, what makes, you know, our attitudes towards violence, our attitudes towards birth in the out-of-hospital setting, bystander, what stops bystanders from participating in a cardiac arrest. That was Dr. Brian Haskins' work. So those are those things where you can explore them qualitatively. And again, with yours, the example you used, did listening to your podcast change them? Obviously, you'd have to have a baseline. But if you didn't, then you'd be going down the kind of the descriptive profile, and that would inform probably future studies. And or, you know, someone may take that and say, I need to do a before and after. Or you can do a before and after too, but that's what we call a longitudinal study as opposed to a cross-sectional. Longitudinal means over time. Cross-sectional means you're getting one survey on this day and that's it. And we'll see how you're tracking. So no before and after. So we try and keep it at the level where it's pretty simple research, but you know, the most complex research, the arrest trials with looking at adrenaline, which are massive, thousands and thousands and thousands of enrolled patients, is this, they follow the same principles. They just multiply it all by 1,000, you know, in terms of the team and the resources and the things like that. So, you know, those are very pivotal studies and well done, because they're changing the way that we view use of adrenaline in cardiac arrest, for instance. Is it the best thing since sliced bread? Is it not? Is it saving people that have other problems now that they're saved? And I won't answer those questions, but that's, you know, those are questions that are posed because those studies took place.
Absolutely.
Which makes it even more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to break down the research methodologies. It makes a lot of sense the way that you are explaining it there. I guess too, for our listeners as well, we do recommend you go and read the Introducing Designing and Conducting Research for Paramedics textbook, which is linked below. Elsevier are kindly giving us 5 of those textbooks to give away. That'll help you break down some of these topics and ideas and concepts that we are bringing to you. But Sandy, what kind of advice would you give to someone if they're really not sure in terms of what kind of research design suits their interest or their particular topic that they are going to be looking into?
If you've been kind of watching the literature in the area, so you're getting these Google alerts and you're saying, I really like, there's a researcher in Canada by the name of Walt Tavares, and he's probably one of the most brilliant paramedic researchers you'll ever meet. Like, I read his stuff and he's proposing things that I agree with, and I want to see if you can test them here. So you give it to a master's student. So the first is the literature, identifying who's doing something in your area that you want to explore further. And then having you as a new researcher, you need a support mechanism. You need a person or a panel or a group of supportive people, might be in your service. There is probably a research department in your service. And you need to take full advantage of that to help you as you're getting closer to getting a research question formulated and ready to apply a methodology to it.
That's fantastic. I mean, one of the common things that people talk about is always wanting to change some kind of practice at work or change a piece of equipment or implement a new piece of equipment, whether that be for monitoring or for treatment. As we spoke about, that comes in things like RCTs, but how would you go about starting that sort of process and getting that kind of change in the workplace?
You remember a few minutes ago, we talked about literature reviews, lit searches and lit reviews. You have to, if your next step is the medical director, like me, totally unarmed about aspirin, you have to have studied the literature in a systematic and comprehensive way and summarized it. So by that, I mean, if you're saying in your trust, you find that iliofacial blocks that other countries are doing looks really promising, and you're getting at least one a week where you know you could do it. So going into your medical director with that argument will not get you anything, and it shouldn't. But if you went in with some RCTs on iliofacial blocks and you found that Aidan Barron and others are really across this and they're publishing in high-quality journals, and you've summarized it in a literature review, and you've pointed out it's useful, it's economical, and it's transferable to your setting, then that's the most powerful argument you make. So remember I said start with a systematic review, a lit review. That's where it starts. And that could set up a trial, you know, with your within your service, or it could literally spark the introduction of that particular skill in the official blocks. What you don't want is like my medical director said, Sandy, go find me the research, any research. And I was stunned. Again, going back to the textbook that shows you how to do a literature review, narrative, or systematic, and how to present it is key to you being able to say, we need to do a trial, or better than that, we're ready to put this guideline into place based on the fact that 63 other countries are doing it. And when you look at all of their results, it's very favorable.
Absolutely. And do you need to do an ethics, or get ethics approval to do, say, a systematic or a lit review?
No, eminently publishable. So, you know, that jaunt into the literature we talked about earlier, that's dipping your toe in the water. But then, you know, the methodology of doing a systematic or a narrative lit review is very straightforward. It's like not pages and pages. It's a couple of pages in terms of how to get yourself set up, how to do the searches. Our librarian is our friend. Our researcher in that area is our friend. People that we're finding in the literature are our friends, because you can write to these authors and say, you know, tell me more about how you did this or why you did it this way. Researchers love getting those emails, or at least I did. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I mean, last time we spoke about how to get started, and you gave some advice on obviously how to get started into research and getting that topic of interest. What would be your overall advice for someone who is now looking at getting started with the actual research design and methodology so they can take away a key point?
They'll have to define whether they want to do something along the lines of a randomized control trial, a descriptive profile, a cross-sectional or longitudinal study, quantitative in origin, qualitative in origin, or mixed methods in origin, whether their study could simply be a lit review. That's it, and nothing else besides that. That they've also identified who's going to be able to answer their next question relatively easily. And from, you know, for you, all you have to do is email me, for instance, and you'll get an answer. And then you start to see if there's a synergy, if there's spots in that person's ability to supervise or help you, formally or informally. And then between the two of you, or three or four, you would pick an appropriate methodology, but again, based on what you've been reading in that area.
Awesome. And I guess then for our listeners that are wanting to learn more about it and read more about these particular methodologies, they can also jump straight into the textbook Introducing Designing and Conducting Research for Paramedics as well. And so obviously all that will be in the show notes for everyone as well.
It's a big subject, but we're breaking it down into kind of bite-sized pieces.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Research Mini-Series. We hope you've enjoyed it, so please let us know through social media and via email, and we hope to have some great discussions with you. Next episode is our final episode of this mini-series, and we'll be going through the critical appraisal of evidence to use that for your assignments, for paramedic practice, and how to make your research one that is valid and trustworthy. So we hope you enjoy.